Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Dana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Dana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Ravanacha. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Dana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Pribhajakacharya Stotra Satya Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Pribhajakacharya Stotra Satya Shri Srimad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnav Rinda Ki Jai. ISKCON BBD Founder Acharya His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Babu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Rinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakund Radha Kund Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavindam ki jai, Mayapurdam ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Gangamai ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulasi Maharani ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Karnapur Prabhu, you could put up text 104, please. 104, the last of the 11 verses. Jeez, 11 verses today, we're not going to... I actually don't like when there's multiple verses like that, because each of those verses, of course, is no purport, so we don't give a separate class. But each of them are, you know, big, big, fat, juicy verses that lots could be said, but we'll try to zip through them. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 23, Life's Ultimate Goal, Text 94 through 104. We'll do 104 all together and then we'll go back. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Everyone chant. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane Krishna Seva Vaishnava Achara. Bhakti Smriti Shastra Kari Kariha Prachara. Vrindavane. In Vrindavan. Krishna Seva. The service of Lord Krishna. Vaishnava Achara. Behavior of Vaishnavas. Bhakti Smriti Shastra, the reference books of devotional service. Kari, compiling. Kariha, do. Prachara, preaching. Translation, quote, establish devotional service to Lord Krishna and Radharani in Vrindavan. You should also compile bhakti scriptures and preach the bhakti cult from Vrindavan. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Sanatana Goswami was enjoined, one, to broadcast the revealed scriptures on devotional service and establish the conclusion of devotional service. Two, to re-establish lost places of pilgrimage like Vrindavan and Radhakund. Three, to establish the Vrindavan method of temple worship and install deities in temples. Sri Sanatana Goswami established the modern Mohan temple, and Rupa Goswami established the Govindaji temple. And four, to enunciate the behavior of a Vaishnava, as Srila Sanatana Goswami did in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. In this way, Sanatana Goswami was empowered to establish the cult of Vaishnavism. As stated by Srinivasacharya in his Sad Goswamyashtaka, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatano Raguyugo Sri Jiva Gopalako. Quote, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. This Krishna consciousness movement continues the tradition of the six Goswamis, especially Srila Sanatana Goswami and Srila Rupa Goswami. Serious students of this Krishna consciousness movement must understand their great responsibility to preach the cult of Vrindavan, devotional service to the Lord, all over the world. We now have a nice temple in Vrindavan, and serious students should take advantage of it. I am very hopeful that some of our students can take up this responsibility and render the best service to humanity by educating people in Krishna consciousness. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavati Paschita Deshatarine. So like I said, a lot of verses, 11 shlokas. We're going to sadly kind of zip through the first 9 or 10 and focus more on that one we just read. But these are all worth studying. Text 94 says, now hear the mellows appear. I'm sorry, now hear how the mellows appear and how they are realized by the devotees on different transcendental platforms. So Mahaprabhu is more or less finished with here at this point with his instructions to Srila Sanatana Goswami. But in the rest of this chapter, he's still making a couple of important points that enable one to actually appreciate and understand and enact all those instructions that he gave. So how they appear and how they are realized, he says. The word realized is also interesting, anubhave. Anubhava, Prabhupada translates as realized. Anubhava also means an ecstasy that follows from something. So following these instructions, they're ecstatic, but there's an anubhava, there's something that follows from that. And that's realization, and realization, just like Prabhupada would talk about gyan and vigyan, theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge. So he's talking about realization here. So how are they realized? How are they understood? In answer to that, Mahaprabhu quotes, well, he's not quoting Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He's speaking it, and Srila Rupa Goswami put it in his Nectar of Devotion. So here's four verses in a row. Text 95 through 98. For those who are completely washed of all material contamination by pure devotional service, who are always satisfied and brightly enlightened in the heart, who are always attached to understanding the transcendental meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam, who are always eager to associate with advanced devotees, whose happiness in the service of the lotus feet of Govinda is their very life, who always discharge the confidential activities of love, for such advanced devotees who are by nature situated in bliss, the seed of love, rati, is expanded in the heart by previous and current reformatory processes. Thus, the mixture of ecstatic ingredients becomes tasty, and being within the perception of the devotee reaches the highest platform of wonder and deep bliss. So this is how these teachings, which we've been hearing for some weeks or months, of Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami, this is how it becomes tasty, by all these different items. And in his commentary on this set of verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Jiva Goswami explained that the first two of those four verses is mainly describing sadhana bhakti, the activities of sadhana. And the next two verses are describing the awakening of rati, or the awakening of bhava, or bliss, or ecstasy within the heart. Bhakti nirduta doshanam prasano jvalachetasam. Yes, for those who are completely washed of all material contaminations by pure devotional service, this is anartha nivritti, who are always satisfied and brightly enlightened in the heart, who are attached to understanding the transcendental meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. So all of these are the activities of sadhana. And then in the second two verses, it's describing, for such advanced devotees who are by nature situated in bliss, the seed of love of rati is expanded in the heart. So this is the beginning of bhava bhakti. And also in his commentary on these same verses, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this term. I'm sorry, I'm not reading the Sanskrit along with it, but let's see if I can. Prema taranga bhutani krityan yevanu tishtatam. Prema taranga bhutani. That all of these activities have to be saturated with prema. Even in the stage of sadhana, for it to be fully effective, there has to be some element of prema. In other words, it's not a mechanical process. There are mechanics, there are things we do, practical things we do, but for it to be really effective, it has to be prema tarangini. Where is it again? Prema taranga bhutani krityani. The activities have to be done with love, with some degree of love, or suffused with prema. And the result of that, vibhava araya, all these different bhavas, which we've also been hearing about in previous weeks, will become awakened and enlivened. And all those, when those five bhavas become awakened and practiced and enlivened, then the result of that is prema. Very briefly, vibhava, which are things like Krishna, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's personality, Krishna's paraphernalia, Krishna's devotees, these stimulate love of Krishna. Vibhav, what's after? Anubhav. We said anubhav is subsequent ecstasy. In this technical sense, it means that okay, you see Krishna or you hear about Krishna or you associate with Krishna's devotees and you become ecstatic. And anubhav, something follows from that, some activity, that you'll do some service, you'll dance in ecstasy, you'll go out preaching, you'll chant more, whatever, some subsequent activity. Just like a parent, when the parent sees the child, or even just sees the shoes of the child, that's like vibhav. They see that, and the love in the parent's heart becomes awakened. So from that awakening of love in the heart, there's some anubhav, there's some subsequent action that the mother or the father will see the child, feel the love in the heart, and then go up and hug the child, kiss the child, feed the child, whatever. This is anubhav. Next is sattvika bhav. These are involuntary, more or less involuntary reactions to the awakening of love, that you may cry tears out of love for the child or out of love for Krishna. You may cry tears. You may become stunned. Your hair may stand on end. This is sattvika bhav. Vyabhichari bhav are different kinds of emotional responses which rise up out of that love, accentuate that love, and then they subside, but they leave the love elevated. Just like if the mother sees the child in danger, then, or like Mother Yashoda would see Krishna in danger, and it would so much stimulate her love for Krishna. But it's not, and after some time when Krishna was safe, after Putana was dead, she grabbed Krishna, she hugged him, she protected him, they did all the auspicious waving the yak tail and all these different things. And then the fear went down, the anxiety about Krishna went down, but the love is still elevated. And then finally is sthayibhav, which is the realization, the enactment of all of these to fulfill the particular relationship. Again, like the mother, all these things combine to create this steady state of motherly love. So all these things come from acts of sadhana, awakening our love for Krishna when they're done properly, when they're done prema taranga kritani, bhuta kritani, when they're done with love, when they're done properly. So, like I said, we're going to zip through these. So going on, texts 99 and 100. The exchange between Krishna and different devotees situated in different transcendental mellows is not to be experienced by non-devotees. Advanced devotees can understand and appreciate the different varieties of devotional service reciprocated with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Non-devotees cannot understand the transcendental mellows exchanged between the devotee and the Lord. In all respects, these are very difficult to understand, but one who has dedicated everything to the lotus feet of Krishna can taste the transcendental mellows. This word, can taste them, is very interesting and very to the point. In text 99, e rasa asvada nahi abhaktera gane, Krishna bhakte gana kare rasa aswadane. Swad, just like there's that Indian food company, Swad, right? We see it, the Indian Swad. This means tasty or delicious. So, e rasa asvada, who can taste the delicious taste of rasa, of relationship with Krishna, nahi abhaktera, the non-devotees cannot. And who can taste it? Krishna bhakta gana, they can taste it. The assembly of the devotees of Krishna, they can taste this wonderful taste. So it's a taste. We develop different tastes according to our nature. We develop different tastes for different things. Prabhupada would often give the example of the hog, that if you offer the hog some nice halava, it won't be interested. It would rather go for its usual preferred foodstuff instead of the halava. Prabhupada also told the story of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta when he was preaching in Burma, I think it was, and he was preaching there, and he was cooking prasad, making nice puris fried in ghee. And all of the neighbors, all of the people in the neighborhood, when they smelled that, they were, oh, what's that horrible smell, that disgusting smell, when they smelled puris frying in ghee. But the local people, they had a favorite food. I can't remember the name of it, but the local people, this is how Prabhupada describes it, that the local people, if there was some like dead rat or some dead animal in the street, they would scoop it up and put it in a pot and then bury that pot for 3 million years. And then after some time, when it was all rotted and liquefied, they would dig the pot up and scoop it out and use it as a condiment. And this is a common thing. I'm just like there's fish sauce, right? In Oriental cooking, and in ancient Rome, there is garum. These are all basically rotted dead animals to make a condiment. And they thought, oh, this is the most delicious thing in the world. We have to put this on all our food. And of course, a sattvic person smelling that will be disgusted. But they loved that taste. That was their taste, asvada. But they couldn't taste, they couldn't appreciate the taste of puris fried in ghee. So everyone has taste, a particular taste. Friedrich Nietzsche said, let's see if I can find that also. I can't find the exact quote, but Friedrich Nietzsche said that you can say that, or you tell me that, taste or preference is it's just a matter of personal taste and it can't be dictated. He says, but the whole of human life is a debate, is an argument about taste, what is tasty and what is not tasty. So the devotees, asvadane, they can taste and they want to taste, they're dying to taste this ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. And the materialists, they want the taste of the corpses in material life. Even the living person, it's a living soul inside of a corpse, which is temporarily animated. So this is the taste of the materialist and the taste of the spiritualists. And we cultivate that. We cultivate that taste. And when we appreciate that, then Krishna Bhakta Gana. Krishna Bhakta Gana means the association of the devotees, the group of the Krishna Bhaktas. So when we join that group, really join that group, then we could taste that ecstasy. All these things that Mahaprabhu has been describing over 100 verses, more, hundreds of verses, then we could taste that. We can appreciate that a little bit. Let's see. What's the other one? Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagarti samyami. That the devotee says, oh, daytime, the sun is up. Mangalarti, temple program. Never mind my hypocrisy on this issue. I'm speaking theoretically here. But that's the devotee feels, oh, the sun is coming up. Just like Prabhupada when he was talking about spontaneous love. In Nectar of Devotion, he says, in the beginning, the devotee is thinking, oh, the Shastras say, my spiritual master says, get up and go to the temple in the morning. But then when the devotee gets a taste, then he's anxious, he's eager to go to the temple and see the deity and dress the deity and decorate the deity in various ways. And this is the beginning of having a taste, when you actually have a taste for serving Krishna. So in this way, different people have different tastes. And then, skipping ahead, text 103 and 104. Previously, I empowered your brother Rupa Goswami to understand these mellows. I did this, that's 102. I did this while instructing him at the Dashashramedha Ghat in Prayag. O Sanatana, you should broadcast the revealed scriptures on devotional service and excavate the lost places of pilgrimage in the district of Mathura. Establish devotional service to Lord Krishna and Radharani in Vrindavan. You should also compile bhakti scriptures and preach the bhakti cult of Vrindavan, from Vrindavan. So Mahaprabhu has been speaking deep, deep, ecstatic philosophy for so long. I don't know how long Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami were talking. Does anyone know how long that conversation was? Because I don't. But it was many days. And not only many days, but Mahaprabhu actually says, let's see if I could quickly find that also. Text 101, Sankshepe Kahilon. He said, although speaking for many days, and we've been hearing this philosophy, and it's so deep and it's voluminous, it's a lot. It's chapters and chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's a lot. But he says, again, Sankshepa Kahilu, and he says, I'm just giving you a little bit, a summary here. I've spoken this. And when he's done, he's more or less done with the philosophy. Now, what does he do? He tells Sanatana Goswami, now I have some service for you. So this is very significant. And we can also keep in mind Her Grace Mukya Prabhu, what she read this morning about Prabhupada saying not just meditation, but active service. So we can keep that in mind. And he gave this great important service to Srila Sanatana Goswami, which Prabhupada says broadcast the Bhakti Shastra, developed Vrindavan, established the standards of deity worship, established the behavior of a Vaishnava. And I won't go into it, but after that, in his final conclusion, Mahaprabhu also explains that of Vaishnava, again, just like this point of service, it's not just philosophy. Here he's saying a Vaishnava has to do some service, and then he says, and a Vaishnava has to behave properly. He has to know what proper renunciation is, what proper behavior is, so that we don't get an idea that, oh, I read this philosophy, now I'm on this platform, but there's a lot that goes with it. And most importantly here is that now he's given some service. If you're given some great gift from someone who you love and respect, then you want to serve them. We can imagine a couple where one person is saying to the other, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then the beloved person says, oh, I want to do this very nice thing. Can you do it with me? Can you help me with it? And the person saying, I love you, says, no, I'm not going to do that. And says, well, I have this important thing I have to accomplish for my benefit, for the benefit of the world. Can you help me with it? I love you, I love you, I love you. No, I can't help you. Or I'm in distress. Can you please offer me some assistance or some kindness? I love you, I love you, I love you. No, I can't offer you any assistance. So at some point, you have to question whether that I love you, I love you, I love you has any real significance or any real depth. So therefore, the devotee wants to serve the Mahaprabhu, Krishna, the spiritual master, the parampara, the spiritual master's movement, he has to serve. Last time I gave class, I described a little bit from Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, how Narada Muni was going through sort of a ladder of different devotees, saying, who has attained the actual mercy of Krishna? And because it was Nisringa's appearance, I concluded with Prahlad as the great recipient of Krishna's mercy. And because it was Nisringa's appearance, I stopped there. But if you continue in the story, Prahlad Maharaj very humbly says, I have not at all received Krishna's mercy. He came to kill the demon, and he spent a little time there. And yes, he protected me, but he was also protecting all the demigods in the whole world. And then he went away. If you want to know who really has received Krishna's mercy, you need to go to Kim Purusha Loka, and you need to see Hanuman. And what was his rationale? What was Prahlad Maharaj's rationale for saying that Hanuman had actually received the mercy of the Lord? He said, because Hanuman is engaged in service. There's that also nice verse, that Shravane Parikshit, that's all I remember of the verse, where different acharyas are given who exemplified attaining perfection through one particular service, Shravane Parikshit, that Parikshit Maharaj became perfect just by hearing. And when it gets to Hanuman, Hanuman attained his perfection through offering service. So this is what Mahaprabhu is saying to Sanatana Goswami, that I've given you this high, high philosophy, which you need to learn and assimilate, and also now you have to preach it, you need to write it, and you need to offer these practical services, excavate the holy places of Vrindavan, write the books, compile the literature. You have to offer some service. Um, Let's see. So philosophy must be accompanied by service. That's why Bhagavad Gita says, if you want to understand the absolute truth, tadvidhi, if you want to understand this transcendental knowledge, tadvidhi pranipatena, you need to surrender. And what is that surrender? Pariprashnena sevaya. Pariprashnena, that means you inquire. That means you're hearing philosophy. You're hearing answers to your questions. And Prabhupada would often stress the ordinary is not the right word, but the ordinary, the external nature that you have a question, you ask a question of the spiritual master, of the devotee, and you get an answer. It's conventional, in a sense. But it's important. It's also spiritual and internal. But there's that side of it, pariprashnena sevaya, and you have to offer service. If you try to split those and only do one, if you only want to do service but you don't study Srila Prabhupada's books and chant and meditate on these instructions, then it'll be very difficult to maintain that service because you have no philosophical basis. And if you also just want to be an armchair philosopher and claim or aspire to love of Krishna, like the theoretical lover who says, I love you, I love you, I love you, but offers no service, that's also going to be very difficult, because although Prabhupada stressed the ordinary nature of it, that you ask questions and you get answers, it's also an internal process, and you need to actually please. In that purport, I think Srila Prabhupada says that the disciple has to pass the test of the spiritual master. So part of that is doing service. So the devotees have to engage in service. We study these parts of Bhagavatam, of Chaitanya Charitamrita. We do the so-called internal things, the chanting, the meditation, the study, the reading, and we also do the service. And when the devotee serves like that, then his internal processes become awakened and enlivened, and the devotee becomes empowered by the spiritual master and by Krishna to do it. In that old ITV production about Srila Prabhupada's life, I think they quoted some scholar, maybe it was Dr. Stilson Judah, I can't remember, who was describing how Prabhupada went to his new devotees, mostly just ex-hippies, saying, start a magazine, Back to Godhead magazine. And he said, these people had no knowledge of making a magazine except perhaps having read one before. But Prabhupada told them, no, do it. You have intelligence, Krishna will empower you, you can do it. And they did it. Or the devotees, like Prabhupada, sent the three couples to England to preach. What a gigantic service that was. Go to England, starting ISKCON in the European continent, and meeting the Beatles and preaching to them and spreading so much big service. So much so that Prabhupada said that what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's sannyas disciples couldn't do, these grihasthas could do. So it is big service, and because of that, they're empowered by Krishna. Also, Bhagavatam says, nasta praesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya, and Prabhupada makes the point of explaining that nityam bhagavata sevaya doesn't mean just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That's one Bhagavata, the book Bhagavat, Prabhupada would say. And the other Bhagavat is the devotee Bhagavat, the tadiyanam samarchanam, right? The devotees of Krishna are as worshipable or more worshipable. So you hear Srimad Bhagavatam and you serve the great devotees. And from that, then anartha nivritti can come and advancement can come from that process. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. And in this ISKCON movement, that's the opportunity Prabhupada gave. Otherwise, he could have just written books and mailed them. He did that also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent his book to McGill University, and it was there. But until someone came and actually doing the service, then that Krishna consciousness wasn't awakened in the Western world. So doing some service on 26th Second Avenue very early, Prabhupada was speaking. Everyone knows this story from the Leelamrita. One drunk street person came stumbling into the storefront with an armful of toilet paper. And he said, yeah, here, I brought this for you. And he put some toilet paper there or in the bathroom. And Prabhupada saw that, and then the drunk stumbled out. And he said, just see, he's not in order, but he wants to offer some service. So some service, some big service, some small service has to be there. Some devotees here may know the devotee used to live in Vrindavan, since passed away, Bhuvaneshwar. Some people know him, Bhuvaneshwar. Yes, no. Anyway, he was such an amazing person. Years ago, earlier in my life, I used to spend more time in Vrindavan, and I felt fortunate to have been a little friendly with him, and he was also very friendly and kind to me. He used to live underneath the deities in Krishna Balaram temple in the basement there, and he'd go there and we'd read Krishna book, and because he was a cook, he always had lots of maha sweets there. And he was such a sweet person, but he was also a real curmudgeon. He could appear harsh sometimes, and sometimes when I'd come to Vrindavan, he'd see me and he'd have some strong words. Like one time he said, oh, you've put on some weight. You're probably eating too much pizza and pasta, right? So he would sometimes offer some criticism like that. And another time I came and he saw me and he said, so what service are you doing? And at that time, that was shortly after I had gotten married, I think. And I said, oh, well, I'm, you know, establishing my household and I'm trying to practice simple living and grow my garden and study Srila Prabhupada's books. And he said, that's not service, that's just living. So those things also are service, but it's an important point he's making, that we want to offer some active service. Just like Sanatana Goswami's hearing was service, but Mahaprabhu said, but I also have this service for you that you must do. And we do that. There's so many different services that Prabhupada wanted and expected of us. One basic big service, of course, is giving money. I'm not a manager, so this doesn't touch me personally, but giving money is an important service. Let's see, this is from Krishna book. Sacrificial ceremonies performed by Vasudev. Everyone wants to accumulate riches. Everyone wants to enjoy life to the greatest extent. Everyone wants a wife, home, and children. And everyone wants to become happy in this world and be elevated to the heavenly planets in the next life. But these desires are the causes of one's material bondage. Therefore, to get liberation from this bondage, one has to sacrifice his honestly earned riches for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. Also very early in the movement, Satsarup Maharaj, maybe he was even still Stephen then, I'm not sure. He was working for the New York Welfare Department, Social Services, and he was working every day and he saw all the other young devotees, many, if not most of whom were unemployed and hippie-ish or whatever. And they were staying with Prabhupada all day long. So he was seeing that and feeling, oh, little, I'm missing out, that they're staying all day and I have to work all day. So he went to Prabhupada, Swamiji, and said, oh, I'm thinking of quitting my job so I could spend all day hearing from you. And Prabhupada said, don't do that. You're contributing money from your salary to, you know, keep things going, to keep the wheels moving. This is also very important service. Don't give it up. So giving money is important, whether it's, you know, in the temple for the deity worship, for the new floor of the prasadam pandal or whatever, or if you don't want to give to the temple, you may have some favorite person or favorite mission in ISKCON that inspires you and you can give to that, or you can spend it yourself, just like that Krishna book quote I read was, I read it just a few days ago at a devotee's house who regularly hosts a Krishna book reading. So he's opening his house, he's distributing prasad, he's inviting guests. So that means he's spending his family paraphernalia and his money in the service to Krishna. That's also good. Actually, I know several devotees like that who go to great efforts, a lot of time cooking and preparing and inviting devotees into their house. So this is also using your facility, your wealth, to serve Krishna. And also something to remember is that if someone has $100 million and they give $1 million to ISKCON. That's a wonderful thing. That's a glorious thing. But at the same time, he's giving 1% of his wealth. And if a devotee is poor and has $1,000 and only gives $10 to ISKCON, by percent, it's the same percentage. Another old friend of mine who's unfortunately passed away was His Grace Judd Bharataprabhu, who was my mentor in book distribution. And he used to say, one of his lines when he was collecting donations for books was, "It's not how much you give, but how much you hold back. That's important." So, of course, the person who gives $1 million, this is worthy of glorification and important that ISKCON needs this thousands and millions of dollars to push on its programs. But by percentage and by devotion, it could be just as significant as for the poor person to give a little bit. Now it's escaping me when Lord Krishna in Krishna book, and he visited simultaneously, he divided himself and visited the poor Brahmana and the rich king. What were their names? I can't remember. No one remembers that? Anyway, this is in Krishna book. He divided himself into two, and he visited the poor Brahmana and the rich king. And they each served Krishna and the sages according to their capability, and Krishna accepted them equally. Or there's the nice story of Ramchandra's pastimes, which is not actually in Ramayana. It's a later story that was introduced, but I think Prabhupada told it, and it's still a good lesson, that when Lord Ram was building the bridge to Lanka, and Hanuman was taking big boulders and mountaintops and placing them to build the bridge, and he saw, sometimes the story is said, it's a spider was like kicking some little grains of sand to make the bridge, or sometimes it said a squirrel or a chipmunk. I've seen chipmunks in Vrindavan, not squirrels. Was also doing that, kicking some sand or some little pebbles. And Hanuman said, get out of the way. Can't you see we're doing serious work here? You're not contributing anything with your little grains of sand. We need these big mountains, these big boulders. And Lord Ramchandra told Hanuman, I don't need his service and I don't need your service, but you're both doing it out of your love for me, therefore I consider them equal. So a small devotee, he may not be a bold preacher who can go to a new country with no facility and no backup and no money and no nothing and start and help Prabhupada start his worldwide movement, but we could do little things. And those little things can also be accepted as great by Krishna. This is also a very nice, Satyaraj Prabhu wrote a book, I can't remember the title of it now, where he interviewed different Vaishnava scholars about Krishna consciousness. And he spoke to Srivatsa Goswami, who was actually very nice devotee. I also had the fortune to meet him once or twice in Vrindavan. He's from the Radha Damodar Temple Goswami line, and he also had his own, you know, spiritual movement. And he was interviewed, and he said this about ISKCON. This is Srivatsa Goswami. The real strength and glory of ISKCON lies in anonymous, obscure, yet sincere devotees. It does not lie in temples, in distributing 80 million gitas in a huge bank balance, or in any of those things. Again, those things are laudable when used properly. But the real strength and glory lies in just 5 or 10 sincere, if also obscure, devotees. And ISKCON has many of them. The big people will come and go, but a sincere, simple heart will always be there, will always be ready to worship Krishna with love and devotion. And that's what keeps the movement alive. So we need the big guns who are going to give thousands and millions of dollars, because that's pushing on the movement. And the big, powerful preachers who are doing so much to move forward Srila Prabhupada's movement and save the world. But we also need the little guns, the backup, just like years ago when I was a pujari and Niranjana Swami preached to me that, okay, and I left book distribution to do that. And he said, one meditation is, you serve the deities nicely and you dress the deities nicely. And the devotees will see that and become so enlivened by the beauty of Krishna as you've helped decorate him that they'll also be inspired to go out preaching. Or Prabhupada said this, you know, the person who's, you know, cleaning the floor of the temple is as good as the pujari who's worshiping the deity in the temple. So the point is we need to learn this philosophy, study this philosophy, do all the internal practices, and we need to do some seva. Again, in Nectar of Devotion, I'm late, but I promise I'll wrap it up quickly. One should learn this small technique, and he should be very eager and actually cry to become engaged in some particular type of service. This is called lolium, and such tears are the price for the highest perfection. And very last thing, I promise, shortly, Prabhupada was exemplary in this. In his hearing and chanting, and hearing from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, we know, we've heard a million times how Bhaktisiddhanta said when Prabhupada was recommended for initiation, and he said, I have marked him. He does not go away. He likes to hear. So he was hearing like Sanatan Goswami, but he was also serving like Sanatan Goswami. So just before the disappearance of Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada wrote him a letter. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances at your lotus feet. You have got many disciples, and I am one of them. But they are doing direct service to you. Some of them are brahmacharis, some of them are sannyasis, but I am a householder. I cannot. Sometimes I give monetary help. While I cannot give you direct service, is there any service I can give to you? And Bhaktisiddhanta wrote back to him very shortly before his disappearance. He says, I am fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people who are not conversant with the languages of the other members. This will do much good to yourself as well as to your audience. So Prabhupada was crying for that service, engage me in some service. And the service in this letter that Bhaktisiddhanta gave him was the same service that he offered on the very first day when Prabhupada met him as a young man. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, you're both intelligent, educated young men. Why don't you preach the message of Mahaprabhu all over the world? And it's the same message he told all of his disciples to do that. But Srila Prabhupada took that service and made it his life and soul. And that's big service, the biggest service. But if we could take some service to Krishna, some service to Prabhupada, to the devotees, to ISKCON, and make it our life and soul, that will enable us to understand these teachings of that Mahaprabhu gave to Srila Sanatana Goswami to understand the pastimes of Radha Krishna and the nature of love for Krishna. And if we don't do that service, then it may just remain theoretical to us. Sorry I went too late. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. If there's any questions or comments, we can discuss.
Thank you very much. It's Hare a very Krishna. Nice class. I just wanted to comment that this morning for Mangal Artik, we read a quote from Namamrita, as usual, and it was from the CC. And in the purport, Prabhupada was saying that the way that you can, the test of whether or not we're chanting good japa is how enthusiastic we are for service. Mm.
Yes,
seems
nice.
Like the theme for the day. Thank you.
Very nice. And I've heard it explained, and maybe Prabhupada also explained, how the purport of the Hare Krishna mantra is, my dear Radha and Krishna, please engage me in your service. So again, just like the lover who's saying, I love you, I love you, I love you, but won't do any service, if we're chanting Hare Krishna, but not offering any service, maybe we're not getting the whole message. Yes.
Oh, thank you for the class. And Mother Ekadasi's comment actually had to do with my question, so I thought that I was having. When we're performing our sadhana bhakti, how do we increase our enthusiasm?
Uh, someone who knows you personally could probably answer that better than me. But in general, it's, you know, this may seem like a cop-out, but basically it's following the program that Srila Prabhupada gave, that by when you have jaundice and you don't have a taste for sugar candy, you don't have the enthusiasm for sugar candy, but you take the sugar candy, and then as your jaundice goes away, as the liver becomes stimulated and active again, then the taste becomes manifest. So the short answer is by following the program that Srila Prabhupada gave of chanting and serving and reading and all these things, then the taste will naturally awaken, because that taste isn't something foreign to us. It's our nature. So it's a matter of uncovering the nature that's already there. And like I said, someone who knows you and someone who's also more advanced than me can give you more specific instructions. You know, some people, that will entail doing more chanting and doing more studying. And for some people, that may entail doing more active service, more practical things, more external things. It's different for everyone. But if we remember that that enthusiasm is natural to us, and then we can understand it's a process of not creating something out of nothing, but uncovering what's already there. And I don't want that to be like a cop-out, but that's a general answer. Anything else, question
Hare
or comment?
Krishna, Prabhu.
Yes, Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your important class. I'm referring to the verse 98 in the book, page 59. As it gets near the end, it says, "For such advanced devotees who are by nature situated in bliss, the seed of love is expanded in the heart by previous and current reformatory processes." Can you say what, or give an example of a previous or current reformatory process?
A simple answer is that Srila Jiva Goswami, reformatory process just means the activities of devotional service.
Oh.
And previous and current means in a previous life and in this life. Huh. He actually explains that in his commentary on Rupa Goswami's verse from Nectar of Devotion.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe due to some piety in a previous life or some exposure to devotional service, that brings us to the point of where we are now. And then right now in our life, we're doing the reformatory processes of devotional service, of hearing, chanting, serving, remembering, all these things. So that's what Srila Jiva Goswami says that means.
Ah.
That the reformatory processes are the activities of devotional service, and previous and current means in a previous life and in this life.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. I really appreciate your classes. I was just thinking about this analogy that learning how to love Krishna is like learning how to walk. The ability to walk is already there in a human being, and we're uncovering it. But I was thinking for myself, my own situation, I was living in the ashram for, you know, the first years of my Krishna consciousness, and I started to think in my experience, maybe not for everybody, but in my experience, it was kind of like a baby being in a walker. It's like there's some protection around you. You're not falling. You feel like you can walk. You're making steps, but it's on wheels. You know, you're being supported. You're being held. You're being protected. And then moving out of the ashram is like, okay, now can I do it without the walker? And maybe the ability is there, but it's a little more wobbly. You're trying to figure out, like, and then I paired that kind of visualization up with something that I read recently, that there's two, I guess, I can't remember if it was offenses to the holy name or just, you know, something that we shouldn't do is, if we try to go beyond our level of advancement, or if we don't rise to the level of advancement that we are supposed to rise to. And so then my question was, how do I know what my next step should be, what my next, you know, level should be? And I guess that's something that I would ideally ask someone closer to me who knows more about my, you know, situation. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good question. And to this question and these types of questions, I do have a stock answer. How do I know whether to do this or that? So the general answer is that you need to study Shastra really well. You need to have devotees who are at least peers, if not more advanced, and who know you really well and who care about you deeply to advise you, to use as a sounding board. And you could say, more than I could answer, someone who knows you and cares about you and is willing to be honest with you can tell you, oh, you're not doing enough, or oh, you may be overreaching. And the third one is it takes really honest introspection, that you need to look in your heart and say, is this really what's good for me, without rationalizing? And I can't remember who, but maybe it was the physicist Richard Feynman who said, the easiest person to fool is yourself. So those three things, devotees who can advise you, deep study so you know the actual facts and philosophy and recommendations of scripture, and being able to be honest with yourself and look at yourself. As far as the specifics, am I not engaging my full potential or am I overreaching? There are statements where Prabhupada says that you shouldn't do more than you can easily or reasonably do. And he even gives a Shastric reference, which I don't have at my fingertips, where he says that, so, you know, because that could be setting yourself up for failure or frustration, and then you think, oh, what's the use? Or if you're not doing enough, then you're wasting an opportunity that you have to do more. One side point is that pushing the envelope in the direction of doing a little more is usually a good general principle, but to decide specifically, again, depends on your honesty and your guidance, whether you're spiritual master or friends or associates or authorities, and your own deep study and understanding of Krishna consciousness. But pushing the envelope a little bit is a good thing. Not to the point that you break, but to the point that you're stretching yourself. That's a good thing. Is that okay?
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm thinking of that term, comfort zone. And you were saying, come to the level where you feel, you didn't say comfortable, but you could proceed regulatedly, you know. Isn't that the comfort zone?
You could say that, and it has sort of a, when you say it like that, it does have a slightly negative connotation, that comfort zone, all you're, like you're taking it easy. Just like being married is an admission of that. Mm-hmm. That, okay, I need something. And that's also ashram. That's also a spiritual shelter. And I need to do it. But it's a recognition that, okay, lifelong brahmachari is maybe not ideal or not possible. So let me live like this. But if within that comfort zone, you're also still pushing a little bit, that, okay, I want to be a better grihastha, I want to control my senses more, I want to serve more, I want to preach more, I want to chant more, I want to read more, then within that comfort zone, you could be pushing out of your comfort zone. So there's a way of engaging it and a way of looking at it. And there's a way of just simply considering that if you don't accept that comfort zone, and you say, oh, I'll just stay lifelong brahmachari, then that could also potentially be setting yourself up for a bigger disaster. So we have to be, again, we have to be a little intelligent, a little thoughtful about how to go about these things. But yes, but we should also remember that we don't want to get too comfortable. What did Prabhupada say? An easygoing life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. So, we, like I said, pushing the envelope is good in whatever situation we are, is a good principle to remember. But being sane and being practical is also a good principle to remember. Is that all right? Mukunda Prabhu?
Yes. Also, I think one of the things is that we tend to think that we're kind of the doer when it comes to bhakti. But even in the material world, in that verse, Prakriti Kriyamani Gunai Kamani Savasha, that we're not really the doer in the material sense. And when we come to bhakti, we're not really the doer. we have the choice to surrender, then the process of bhakti itself becomes the doer to raise you in different increments to the higher and higher stages. But what happens is, just like if you imagine the story of Lord Brahma, when he appeared on the lotus flower, he's the most intelligent being in the universe. He started to search up and down in the lotus stem, try to figure everything out. And when he heard tapa, he realized that to mean saranagati. So that's in our purview, that we can do saranagati and do two things in saranagati: anukulyasya sankalpa and pratikulyasya vivajanam. Whatever is favorable for bhakti, I will do that. And pratikulyasya vivajanam, I'll avoid what is unfavorable. If you listen to the rest of that verse, everything else is being done by bhakti itself. Rakshishati vishras gopta vevaranam tata. I have a vishras. Vishras means a firm conviction that Krishna himself, Gurudev, Mahaprabhu, they will protect and maintain my bhakti. So we have to become like witnesses to the power of the kripa, mercy, and bhakti, trusting the process. And also then we become more aware of what's happening in the process. So then we start to realize, oh, I'm gradually making advancement this way. So one thing is, if we don't impose on the process, yes, I'm there, I'm realizing it. Or if we don't repose, no, I can't have any realization, I'm too fallen. So if we just witness the process taking place very humbly, then you see clearly where I'm going, where I am, where I've come from. Because I remember I was traveling for preaching, and one devotee said, yeah, you know, I've been doing this for like so many years, I'm not really getting any realization, so forth, so on. So I told him the story that there was a devotee who went to their guru and said, oh, Gurudev, I've been chanting so long, everything, I'm not really realizing. And the Gurudev told him, okay, you don't have to chant anymore. And the devotee said, no, I have to chant my rounds. He said, no, I'm telling you, you don't have to chant. No, I have to chant. That conviction that I have to chant was proof that he was having realization. But sometimes we romanticize also what is realization. Just like if any friend comes to you and asks you, we should go to do something which you've obviously given up a long time ago, you'd be, no, I don't do that anymore. That's a realization coming from the power of the practice of bhakti. So we also, Prabhuji made a good statement, we have to become introspective about how the process is already working and trust that process, and it will reveal more and more.
Jai, thank you, very nice. And, you know, just like in that, you told about the disciple, I have to chant. So that's like the perfect blending of, you know, self-will and motivation and individual effort plus the surrender, that it's all being done by Krishna and the process of bhakti. So that's the perfect sort of melding of those two principles, that I have to chant, I have to do some service, but at the same time knowing that that's just preparing yourself for the process of bhakti to do its magic on us. Very nice. It's super late. I thank you very much, everybody, for your very kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.